And there we go, everyone. We are back again for another fantastic conversation on Friday Night Counterattack. We are here and we are ready for another great part of the season coming up. We've got another fantastic guest who's already appeared this season and last season with some amazing insight into Bundesliga football. She's absolutely shining, as you've all been seeing in the Bundesliga and in the Champions League across in Switzerland. So without further ado, it's our very special and I would say my favourite half German, half Italian football presenter as well, Valentina Maceri. So Valentina, thank you very much for joining the podcast again this season. It's great to have you on. I do have to say you have been absolutely fantastic in the work you've been putting in this season. Like I said to you before, it's very, very cool how you can speak multiple languages in different football environments as well. So big credit to you. Good to see you again, my friend. How are you doing?
Good. I think after the announcement you give me right now, we can stop the interview because like it won't get any better.
That's okay.
Thank you so much. I'm very happy to be back.
No, very welcome to have you here as well. The pleasure is all mine. And we've got a lot of topics to talk about today, and it's going to be a fun conversation because we've got a lot of, all of them are Bundesliga focused, but I wanted to talk to you at the end about the German national team as well, especially with the European Championships coming up here in England. We're very, very passionate about our national team, and I know for a fact in Germany, the German public are as well. So that'll be something for our audience to stick around to the end of the podcast to find out. But before we're recording, I just have to let everyone know, we are going to be recording in this podcast and we're going to be posting it on our social media, so I do need people to follow Valentina Maceri on her social medias because she is working in Switzerland midweek and she's working in Germany on the weekend, so she's absolutely been fantastic in her work that's been going on this season. So do give her a follow, do find her on her social medias that we will leave in the description below as always. Right, Valentina, let's get into it. Bayern Munich, it's all happening this season. Thomas Tuchel is leaving. Eric Dier signed a full contract till the end of next summer as well. And the man that you mentioned at the beginning of the season, Max Eberl, has become the new sporting director of Bayern Munich. Let me hear your thoughts on what's happening at Bayern Munich so far this season, because they are still looking good, but they're not at their best that we're used to seeing them as well.
I think they're not looking good to start like this, because like they have had a lot of problems with the coach, with their performances. It's not about the results. It's more about the way they play, the way they present, the way the performances are, because it's not Bayern-like, you know. There is this word, this term used in Germany that is Bayern-like, and Bayern is not Bayern-like at all in the moment. And
so stern and so stubborn in the way that they approach the game as well. And even I'm saying about some of their signings that they made as well. Sacha Boui not being as great as we expected.
Everything. I mean, Dier. I think these are problems. Like, they go back in the last year or 2 years before. Like, it doesn't start now, you know?
Yeah.
It started way before. It started in the era of Salihamidzic and Kahn.
Yeah.
They're gone now, so they have left, like, a whole the team and everything, yes. And new people came to the club that maybe don't know really the DNA of the club and what is very important about Bayern Munich and the way Bayern Munich approaches everything, like from their performance to their media appearance to their appearance like on the pitch and stuff. And I think this is something that needs to be changed. And I think Max Eberl is the right person for it because he has like a Bayern Munich past. And he's very into Bayern Munich. And as I told you, like, I think it was beginning of the season or something, we were talking about Max Eberl. I don't remember when it was exactly, but
it was around October time when you talk about how good of a job Max Eberl did for RB Leipzig. Yeah, yeah.
And I think we all knew that this will happen one day because Max Eberl is a fan of Bayern Munich and he never like made a secret about it. And now is the time. And I think he has a lot of work to do, really a lot, an amazing amount of work to do. But if someone is able to change the way Bayern Munich is playing now and the way Bayern Munich is presenting now, I think it's Max Eberl, to be honest.
Absolutely, because with some of the signings, it's been clashes between previous managers under Julian Nagelsmann and this current ownership with Thomas Tuchel as well, because Thomas Tuchel, as we mentioned at the beginning of the season, he wanted to bring in João Paulinho and get rid of Leon Goretzka, which hasn't really worked out, and now is bringing in Alexander Pavlovich, the young player, to kind of start a lot more games because he's trying to show the board that they need a change.
I'm usually a fan of Thomas Tuchel. I think he's a great coach. But to be honest, he and Bayern Munich was never a perfect fit.
Really? So especially with the Dortmund past as well.
Yeah, it was never a perfect match because I think the way Thomas Tuchel wants to play doesn't fit and doesn't match with the team he has. And at Bayern Munich, there are players like Müller, like Kimmich, like Goretzka. They have a huge impact on the team and a huge impact on the club. And if a coach doesn't like these kind of players, like I think Thomas Tuchel and Kimmich or Goretzka will never be the best friends, it gets a little bit difficult. Plus, he didn't get the players he wanted to. So his work was kind of damaged from the beginning, or he wasn't able to like fulfill what he wanted to do. And I think also on the personal level, it wasn't a perfect match neither. So yeah, I think it's like it doesn't match in the end. It doesn't match. And I think it was the only way to stop it and to get a turnaround. It was actually to like let Thomas Tuchel go. To be honest, I was surprised about the timing the club announced it, because it was in the middle of the season and you don't know what happens against Lazio. Yes. I mean, if they will get out of the Champions League against Lazio, I don't know if Thomas Tuchel will stay until summer. But the situation is that there are no alternatives. So I think that's why Thomas Tuchel is still there till summer. And if there would have been alternatives, I don't know if they would have chosen the same timing.
There's so many alternatives you can choose at the end of the season. But for now, yes, let's go through some of them as well. Julian Nagelsmann, would he return to Bayern Munich? Jose Mourinho, who's now a free agent after leaving.
Never.
No way. Why?
Never.
Why?
I guarantee you won't see Jose Mourinho at Bayern Munich. Never. This would be crazy. Like a catastrophe. Like, never.
And it's just chalk and cheese, isn't it? It's just two different, things collided. It would not work.
Two big egos, it's like impossible. I don't know. Maybe I will be completely wrong, and at the end of the season, we will see Mourinho signing at Bayern Munich. But for now, I'd say 99%, never.
And if we're looking at Julian Nagelsmann, who's just recently left to go to the German national team, we have to look at his predecessor as well, Hansi Flick, who won everything at Bayern Munich, and then he then went over to the national team as well. Could you see Hansi Flick returning potentially to Bayern Munich?
Potentially, yes, but unlikely. Unlikely because his relationship to Uli Hoeneß wasn't the best. And the way he left Bayern Munich was considered kind of like...
It was disrespectful. From the outside, it was disrespectful from what I saw. Exactly. He never got the praise or the appreciation he deserved as well. Because when Jupp Heynckes won the Champions League in 2013, he was lauded as the king and he was the one who won and brought the Champions League back. But when it's Hansi Flick in 2020, they're like, oh yeah, it was just...
Yeah, but Bayern Munich felt kind of offended the way Hansi Flick left.
Yes.
I mean, I can understand that Hansi Flick felt never that much appreciated. But what you don't need to forget is Hansi Flick was just a co-coach.
Yes.
So he was just an assistant coach. He was never the head coach. And he got the chance from Bayern Munich. And of course, he really, really did an amazing work, for sure. But Bayern Munich was the club that made Hansi Flick big.
Yes.
Of course, it was a give and return. It was a win-win situation for both sides. But I think this was why Bayern Munich felt offended the way Hansi Flick left. Because of that, because they felt like we were the ones that gave him this chance. And Hansi Flick was like, I want everything you can win with this club and I don't feel appreciated, you know? So it was just a kind of conflict of interests.
It was like, you're not to our level yet and we have to keep earning our respect. And because he didn't continue to keep earning the respect, they got rid of him for... They sought after a better coach at the time as well, which they thought was a better coach. And now you're looking at it. The next one, the last one I was saying in the favourites list is someone who we've been raving about for a year and a half now. Both of us, Valentina, we've been proved right with Xabi Alonso, who's now been deemed as one of the favourites for the next Bayern Munich job in the summer as well. And Simon Rolfe is the technical director of Bayern Leverkusen. He stated that there is a gentleman's agreement. If Xabi Alonso wins the league and he wants to leave for a bigger club, they won't step in his way. But he has said that Xabi Alonso is happy. I want to hear your thoughts on this one. Would you see Xabi Alonso going back to his former club where he played at Bayern Munich to coach them?
I think we'll see Xabi Alonso either at Bayern Munich or Liverpool, or he's going to stay another year at Leverkusen. It depends.
Don't say Liverpool. Don't say Liverpool. I don't want him to go to Liverpool because I think it's too...
Why?
I think, remember, I'm a Man United fan, so I think it's going to be fantastic to see Klopp
go. You're sad at the moment then to see the club like this, right?
And we've got the Champions... No, we've got the FA Cup quarterfinal against Jurgen Klopp as well. But personally, for me, I think having someone like Roberto De Zerbi from Brighton would be a better appointment for the style of play that Liverpool would play under Xabi Alonso. I just want to see one more season of Xabi Alonso at Bayern Leverkusen, because we see this all the time, don't we, Valentina? When we see coaches who do really, really well at a club and then they leave straight away and then their magic is gone and then they end up going downhill as well. So I want to see.
Not everyone.
That's true. That's true. Zidane was a very big exception as well. But
Jurgen Klopp was like, okay, he doesn't leave his clubs immediately, but like, I think none of us would have ever imagined the success Jurgen Klopp has right now in Liverpool at the beginning of his time at Liverpool. Like, he was a big name in German football, but he wasn't a big name in international football.
Yeah.
And the imprints and the impact he had on Liverpool is crazy. I think there will never be someone that could like fulfill the hole that Jurgen Klopp is leaving, because Jurgen Klopp is special personally as well. But I think Xabi Alonso is an amazing coach. Mm. He's an amazing coach because what you can see at Bayer Leverkusen is, of course, he has the right players, but he improved every single one of them. And he's a true leader. I mean, I don't know if you have seen the scene after, I think it was the win against Bayern Munich.
When he was just the coldest man in the stadium, didn't have to move at all. But
at the end of the game, all of his players called Xabi Alonso to come and to cheer with the fans. And Xabi Alonso didn't go straight away, but he called all of his stuff.
Yes.
Like with the assistant coaches, the dogs, the physios, whatever, fitness coach and stuff. His whole stuff. He called his whole stuff and waited for his whole stuff to come and celebrate the win. And I think this is a real leader. Like, Xabi Alonso improved every single player. He's a real leader. He's learning German. I mean, the way he already do press conferences in German is unbelievable, because it's not easy to learn German. I mean, you just said
it. I'm a prime example. Before the recording, I was trying to speak in fluent German.
It's a very difficult language, and I think he's the player that Xabi Alonso was, he has transmitted to the coach he's now. So his mentality, his appearances, his mindset, everything. I think he has like a huge, huge career ahead.
Yeah, he's one of the brightest young coaches in the world of football right now. And when you're looking at the competition that he's got in the Bundesliga, you're looking at a lot of these coaches that have been in their fourth or fifth job around him. And Xabi Alonso is in his second job as well, working at Real Sociedad and then working at...
And he came from Real Sociedad. He didn't come like from, I don't know, Real Madrid or whatever. He was the coach of Real Sociedad, of the second team.
Yes.
And then he took over Leverkusen, and what he's doing now is just unbelievable.
It's really, really cool to see what he's doing as well. And moving on to Bayer Leverkusen as well, who remain unbeaten at the time of recording as well. It's very, very fun to see how Valentino really just mentioned about how every single player has improved. And we were talking glowingly about Florian Wirtz earlier this season, but I need to talk to you about mostly their wingbacks as well, because we have to talk about Jeremy Frimpong and Alejandro Grimaldo, and especially when they've had Victor Boniface, who was shining at the beginning of the season. They brought in Borja Iglesias and some of their younger players who were then squad players, like Adli coming into the first team as well. He's been very, very good. Talk to me about how they've been shining across the team, and especially about how some of their squad players are getting a lot more recognition now in the first team for Bayer Leverkusen.
Well, what is very noticeable about Bayer Leverkusen as well is they were really afraid of the Africa Cup.
Yes.
Because, of course, Boniface got injured. Otherwise, he would have been there as well. And then there was the Africa Cup, where lots of players of Bayer Leverkusen has been playing. So
Kasunu wearing number 7. That really bugged me. Do you remember that, Valentina? Yeah. Centre back wearing number 7. That was crazy.
But they were really afraid, like, they could struggle in this period, like, of the season, you know, which is very important, because I think the real season starts, like, around February, March of the new year. And this was the period of time when the Africa Cup took place. And what is really noticeable is that Bayer Leverkusen, no matter who is not playing of the first 11, of the starting 11, they can replace everyone by being just a great team. And I think this is amazing to watch. And the way Bayer Leverkusen plays is just, you see that they're a team. This is what you're missing at Bayern Munich. When you see Bayern Munich playing, everything feels like heavy.
Yes.
And when you see Bayer Leverkusen playing, everything seems like easy.
Balanced as well.
And balanced. And it's fun watching them. And they're having fun. I mean, I don't know if you have seen like the cheer from Xhaka.
Yes.
Where he kind of...
faked his injury.
He injured. Yeah. Faked his injury.
And I've never seen him so happy. He wasn't that happy at Arsenal getting booed off the pitch.
All
and now he's happy now.
He was happy. And like, they're just like fun to watch. And they're just a team. And you can feel it.
You mentioned the point as well about the African players being out for AFCON as well. One of the replacements who came straight in the team, Stanisic, who was on loan for Bayern Munich. He even scored against Bayern Munich, and it was a big impact because that's normally where Kasun... Yeah, Tuku didn't want him, and he thought, you know what, let's get rid of some of these young players. Joshua Zirkzee is playing well now at Bologna as well, so little shout out to Joshua Zirkzee. But you're looking at Stanisic, who replaced Tapsoba in that starting lineup, or Kasunu in that starting lineup, and he scored against them. It was one of the most emphatic wins of the season in all of world football, and that goal from Frimpong was very, very cool as well. So just like you said, the team has got that goal-driven mindset, and they're really going for it in the Bundesliga right now.
And they will win this championship for sure.
We did predict it at the beginning of the season, so I'll be here in May and I'll be messaging Valentina. I'll be like, we told everyone we're going to get the clips out. We told you all back in September.
You know, at the beginning of the season, I was asked by a lot of people at the Sportbild Award where I have been guests, who do you think for different podcasts and stuff? And they were asking me, who do you think will win the championship at the end of the season? And I was like, I think this time it will be Bayer Leverkusen. And they were all laughing at me, you know? But some experts, they agreed, but most of them, they were like, you're crazy. But
Valentina knows football. That's all I'm saying. Valentina is always knows football. Like,
you know, when you're into football and you, I have been playing for years. So I know some mechanism. And when a team is a winning team,
yes,
you can feel it. They have this special spirit. They're special. And Bayer Leverkusen is special in this season.
One thing I need to ask you before we move on. It's kind of a segue into the next topic, but what did this Bayer Leverkusen team have that the Borussia Dortmund team of last season lack? Because last season, Borussia Dortmund were the talk of the Bundesliga. Jude Bellingham, Marco Reus finally winning the trophy as well. Some amazing players that they had in their side. What's the main difference from your point of view from Bayer Leverkusen for this season and Borussia Dortmund from last season,
Valentina? Well, for sure, with all respect for Edin Terzic, but Xabi Alonso is like the better coach. Why? Because he has won everything as a player. He has this winning mentality. Yes. He knows how to handle situations where you're under pressure. And his mindset is transported to his players. And I think this is the main difference from Bayer Leverkusen to Borussia Dortmund of last season. I think Borussia Dortmund of last season couldn't stand the pressure. They got nervous in the end and they lost it last game. So against Mainz. I mean, what are you talking about? It's Mainz, you know?
And a missed penalty as well, which is crazy to think about.
So, and I think this is the very different difference from Bayer Leverkusen to Borussia Dortmund. It's the mindset and their coach. And I think also the quality of the players. I mean, Borussia Dortmund had an amazing team last season, but compared to the Bayer Leverkusen of this season, I think Bayer Leverkusen is way better.
I would say so as well. And the one thing for me, you mentioned about the coach as well, the aura of both coaches as well. Yeah. Edin Terzic is a fantastic man manager and for me, a really good tactician, but he doesn't have the aura, the presence that Xabi Alonso has in the Bundesliga right now. Because you're looking at how Xabi Alonso came into the side last season and he brought everyone up straight away. He was playing with an injured side as well. So Florian Wirtz was out, Schick was out. I think Andrik and Palacios wasn't in the team and he brought Palacios into the team because it was Andrik and Demiribe as the two centre midfielders as well. And has brought a lot of players through into the system that have worked really well. Nathan Teller is a big example as well. He was a bench player at Southampton last season. Now he's starting games in the Bundesliga, scoring winning goals for the Bayer Leverkusen side. And it's fantastic to see, especially because of the aura of some managers. They just have that presence about them. You mentioned Klopp earlier as well. Xabi Alonso is definitely in that. I would say Xabi Alonso is definitely of that ilk in terms of having great auras. Not in terms of quality just yet for Jurgen Klopp, but in terms of having aura, I would say as well, which is really good. But yeah, one topic I wanted to talk to you about before we move on to, I've got a few today as well, but one thing I need to kind of know, RB Leipzig, Stuttgart, Borussia Dortmund, top four battle. Let's say your thoughts on this one. Are we seeing a new kind of look in the Bundesliga? Because Stuttgart are still third at this moment in time. They are playing some good football.
They have an amazing coach as well, Stuttgart.
Really?
Sebastian Hoeneß. And of course, Bayern Munich would be interested in him as well, of course, because of like his parental relationships, for sure.
Will the players buy into him, though, because of obviously the relationships? Do you think they'd buy into him, the Bayern League?
I think he needs a couple more years to grow. Sebastian Hoeneß, he's very talented, but he's not at the level of Xabi Alonso yet, for instance. So I think one day he will be maybe a Bayern coach, but it's not the time yet. And he's doing an amazing work at Stuttgart. I mean, who would have ever thought to see Stuttgart in the top four or top three of the table of the Bundesliga.
In March as well.
In March. Nobody.
Mm.
Nobody.
I was watching a video earlier today. It was Man United versus Stuttgart when they were in the Champions League back in 2004. 20 years later, they're going for Champions League football again. Do you think Stuttgart could make it into the Champions League for next season?
Why not?
Mm.
For right now, I'd say yes, because like what you often see is when little teams, with all respect to Stuttgart, but small teams with financial limits and stuff, have a good or start good in the season,
yes,
they will lose their self in the process, in the journey. And what we saw at Stuttgart was at the beginning of the year, the same effect, but like they come back.
And I'm really impressed with them as well. Like, it's not just Sohu Guirassy, who you spoke about earlier this season, now is on like 18 or 19 league goals, but the whole team have worked really well. Got to the quarterfinals, I think, of the German Cup as well, which is good.
Bundesliga is doing an amazing job as well.
Would they be, yeah, I was going to say, the way that Undav's playing as well, you're looking at both of them and you're like, these are some top quality players that are now replacing household names in German football, which is good to see how Stuttgart are doing.
I mean, of course, you don't have the same quality over the whole team. Like, you have some outstanding players that are like the winning players for Stuttgart. They have an outstanding coach. And I think this is their formula of success. And then they build a team. I think it could last until the end of the season. They will qualify for Europe for sure, I think. Yeah. I don't know if it will be Champions League. Maybe it's going to be EuroLeague or Conference League in the end. It depends on injuries. It depends on like how the next game will go and stuff. But if they stick together like this and no one gets injured, like if their best players don't get injured, like Undav or Guirassy, and they can play the full potential until the end of the season, I think we'll see for sure Stuttgart at least in EuroLeague.
Because I was literally thinking they would have dropped off during the AFCON as well, because Guirassy had to go to AFCON, but they're still up and firing. I think 5 points ahead of Borussia Dortmund in fourth position as well. And a player that we spoke about last year, Jadon Sancho, going back to Borussia Dortmund. It happened. We predicted it. Well, you predicted it more than I did as well, I would say. And he's not really had the best of times there in Borussia Dortmund, and neither really has him. Quite a lot of the other players as well. There's been a few injuries. Yep. Karen Adeyemi's form has gone downhill from last season. Do you think they're going to be the team that could miss out in the top four? Or do you think Edin Terzic has still got enough in him to get into the top four?
Yeah. And I think here we have the case that because Dortmund or Watzke was missing alternatives for Terzic as well.
Yes.
And they haven't replaced him yet as a coach, to be honest. Because the performances of Borussia Dortmund are like ups and downs. I mean, they're not a team. What you see at Leverkusen is the opposite of what you see at Dortmund. Like, they're not a team. They have good players, but they're not putting their performance on the pitch. And when I watch press conference of Terzic, for instance, I don't feel any spirit. I don't feel like any authenticity.
He's just going through the motions, isn't he? He's just got to do his job, carry on with it.
I'm missing spirit.
Lacking charisma.
Yeah, charisma is the right word, maybe. And I think Borussia Dortmund could end up the disappointment of the season, to be honest.
And they're still in the Champions League at the time of recording. They had a disappointing game against PSV Eindhoven as well earlier this season in a 1-1 draw.
I mean, what you have to admit, of course, is at the beginning of the season, they were in the most difficult group of Champions League.
Group of death.
The group stage, yeah, group F. It was the most difficult by far. And they qualified the first team of this group for the round of 16, you know. But it was always an up and down this season. And what we see now is kind of more in down than an up. And I think PSV Eindhoven could be their like last station this season in Champions League, to be honest. And I think also they really have to fight for Champions League next year.
Definitely.
In the Bundesliga.
I would say so as well. One of the shining players of the last 10 or 13 years, I'd say, Marco Reus. He made history as well this season, being one of the most active scorers in the Bundesliga history. And Valentina, I know you don't like this game, but we are playing this game regardless. It is a start bench sell. So start bench sell. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. Start bench sell. Thomas Müller, Marco Reus, Mesut Özil. Start bench sell.
Mesut Özil, where do you pick him from? Like,
I'm going for like the great number 10s of German football. They've been absolutely fantastic. And modern era. I'm not going to pick Julian Brandt or Kai Havertz. Come on, Valentina. You know me.
What about Musiala?
I'm going for past ones. Actually, we could do. But then who'd you get rid of? Musiala,
Okay, let me say start Mesut Özil, but in his best times. For
yes,
sure.
Yeah.
There's like no option. If you give me Mesut Özil in his best times, he's a number 10, outstanding. So for sure, start with Özil.
Yes.
Bench.
Pressure's on.
I mean, it's difficult. You know why? Because these are like older players. So to sell them doesn't make any sense.
You can have them in their prime. That's all I'm saying. Prime Mesut Özil, prime Müller, prime Marco Reus. Yes. Doesn't have to be 34 year old Marco Reus. By all means, you're absolutely fine.
Then Özil prime would start for sure.
Absolutely.
Müller,
what did you enjoy about Özil the most? Just so I can get this on.
His technique. Mm. His feet. I mean,
just technique. Like you when you played football as well.
There's no comparison to Mesut Özil. Thank you, like, for the compliment, but I would never compare myself to Mesut Özil for sure.
What a left foot he had! Incredible talent.
Amazing. His technique, his approach to the game. His like, he played some passes that you would have never seen before. Like, he did things that you wasn't even expecting to happen. Like, he was a game changer for sure in his prime.
And his combination play was incredible.
Maybe he's one of the best number 10s in the world in his prime. I just talk about his very prime. What happens after, with all the political situation stuff aside. But he's for sure the best German number 10 until now for me.
Big praise. I'm liking this.
In his prime. Yep. We're always talking about his prime. And I'd say I'll bench Müller, because Müller always kind of do some expected things that you know, because he's not the best footballer for sure. But
would you say he's had one of the best first touches?
What he's doing next, you know?
Because he's got one of the best first touches I've ever seen in a German player, Thomas Müller. His control is incredible from what I've seen.
Yeah, you think so?
I think so, especially in front of goal as well. Just shifting it onto his left foot, dummying away, little body feint.
What is the great thing about Müller is that you can't predict what he's doing. Because
expect the unexpected.
Untypically movements, you know? So that defenders sometimes could not predict what he's doing. So I'd bench Müller in his prime, and I'd say Reus in his prime, because you will earn a lot of money.
I would say so as well. And it'd always be injured as well, Marco Reus.
Yeah, and unfortunately, yes. And this is why, unfortunately, Reus was never considered as one of the best, absolute best in the world. It's because of his injury list.
I would say so.
I think if he wasn't that much injured, he would have been for sure one of the best.
I would say so. This is the first time ever you and I have agreed on this one as well. Prime Mesut Özil would start, then I would bench Thomas Müller, then I would sell Marco Reus as well, because they were three incredible players to watch in their prime. Don't worry, I'm not going to clip this up and make you look like, oh yeah, I'm starting. I'm like, no, it's definitely prime players. So,
I mean, it's my opinion.
It's a great opinion because we agree for once, which is great, and I'm loving this. But
so I think if I'm your opinion, then it must be a great opinion, right?
If I'm your opinion, then your opinion is great as well. So it's fantastic. But yeah, talking on Marco Reus's injuries as well. I mean, 2012, he was injured in the warm-up game for the Euros. He missed the World Cup in 2014 when Germany won. He was injured for the 2016 Euros as well. And then he missed the European
World Cup in Qatar as well.
Yeah, he missed the World Cup in Qatar, and he missed the Euros in 2021 at the same time. But with Mesut Özil as well, Mesut Özil was the only player in history to have been the top assist provider in the Premier League, the Bundesliga, La Liga, the Champions League, the Europa League.
There are no doubts. Mesut in his prime is like...
And the World Cup as well.
Unbelievable player.
One of the most underrated and underappreciated players of our generation watching football as well. Unreal in what he did. And remember, he played with an Arsenal team that had Theo Walcott, Lucas Podolski, Olivier Giroud. So he was still assisting players who wasn't the quality of Ronaldo, Benzema, Di Maria. So he has so much quality to offer. And in the German national team, like you said, absolute superstar as well. And Thomas Müller, one of the... What's the term they call him? Ramduta?
What?
Is it Ramanduta? What's the term they call him?
Ramanduta.
I have to Google this.
Google, because I can't understand what you're saying.
The word Ramduta was coined in a football sense by Thomas Müller. The word essentially translates to space investigator.
Can you spell it to me?
Ramduter. Ramduta.
I've never heard it, to be honest.
I'll text it to you later. But Ramduta is like a footballing term for managing space and always being in the right place at the right time. I'm like, okay, cool. That's a cool saying as well. But yeah,
I learned something new here.
I'm teaching you German, which is crazy.
German means I can't speak German at all, but okay.
It's crazy. I don't even know if it is German, but that's what they call them. They call them the Ramduta. Him and Dele Alli were like that as well. But never mind. On to the final topic of today's conversation with Valentina. We are talking about the German national team. So Valentina very rightly mentioned about Jamal Musiala being in the start bench cell. We mentioned him earlier this season in the start bench cell, which is great. But I need to hear your thoughts, Valentina. What's the public opinion right now of the German national team under Julian Nagelsmann? Is it positive? Is it negative? Are you confident in this team as well? Let me hear your thoughts, Valentina.
I'm not confident in this
team. Oh, dearie me.
To be honest, I think no one in Germany is.
Since the World Cup or since the Turkey result? Because it's been quite difficult for the last couple of years.
Since everything. Since, like, okay. I think the last 2 or 3 years. Since Russia, to be honest. Since Russia.
The South Korea game was crazy. Yeah, and the Mexico one.
Since Russia, to be honest. Qatar just confirmed what happened in Russia and the last games confirmed what happened in Qatar. So I think they need a big portion of luck for sure. Yes. Maybe the spirit of being the host of this Euros could, like, I don't know, make them a little bit more fire and excited about everything. Because what you see at Bayern Munich, actually, you can break it down to the national team of Germany.
Oh, dear.
First of all, because you have lots of Bayern Munich players.
Yes. So, starters as well for the German national team.
Yeah. And they're coming from a difficult season. They're coming from, like, a difficult situation and
difficult environment as well.
Difficult environment. And they're put in another difficult environment. And yes. I think to expect them to have a, like, full turnover like this could be difficult.
Yes.
Now they got Kroos back. I think he can help, but you can't expect Kroos to change everything.
Do you think Kroos will start under Nagelsmann? Do you think it's because you've got Kimmich, Goretzka, Gundogan, Andrik?
I think he would be important, like, for the whole spirit of the team as well. But I think he could be also an option to start for sure, because I don't think Kroos will come back just to be a bench player, to be honest. So would have already, like, talked to Nagelsmann about the situation, if whether he's starting or not. And Nagelsmann, I think, told him his expectations for sure. And they agreed. So I think we won't see, like, Kroos on the bench for every game.
I would say so.
I don't know if he's able to do, like, 3 games in a week, about 90 minutes. But what we see at Real Madrid is that he's on fire.
One game on, one game off, basically.
Yeah, but his performances are, like, very, very good for his age.
Definitely.
To be honest. And I think what will happen is that Kroos is replacing Kimmich in the midfield and Kimmich is playing right defender.
What formation would you set them up in? Because they've chopped and changed a few formations recently. They did 3-4-2-1 versus Austria. They did a 4-2-2-2 like RB Leipzig against Turkey as well.
Yeah.
How would you set them up? What would be your preferred starting 11 for Germany?
I always go for 4-3-3, to be honest, because I just like 4-3-3. It's my personal favorite starting formation.
Okay.
I don't know if Germany has the players for a 4-3-3.
Mm.
And this is what you have to, like, see and consider. I think the next 2 games are the most important for Germany and for Nagelsmann as well, because he doesn't get any more time. And, I mean, June is around the corner, you know? And until now, he doesn't really have a full formation.
Yeah.
So I think he needs to test some more things, but he doesn't have the time to test these things.
There's only like 3 games left, I think, until the Euros.
Yeah. So, and June is around the corner. I mean, we have March now. It's 3 months.
And you can't be playing players out of position, because one of the things I wanted to do for the German national team is, how do you fit Wirtz, Sané, Musiala into an attacking three? Like, how does it kind of work? Do you have to bench one of them? Do you have to play 2 out position? How does that kind of work for me? And I'd go Musiala in the middle, obviously. I'd get the best out of Musiala. Wirtz on the left, because he has played there. Maybe Sané on the left or Gnabry on the left. But Hoffman's been very well this season as well.
I think Wirtz is even better than Musiala this season for sure. I mean, what he's playing right now after his heavy injury is outstanding.
Definitely.
He has recovered so well from his injury. And the problem is, we don't really have a striker at the German national team.
You do have a striker, but he's playing at left wing back. Kai Havertz. That was a crazy claim. Do you remember when he played left wing back?
Kai Havertz. I know, like, this was a
I don't get that at all. Like, do you play Kai Havertz or do you play, what's his name, Füllkrug at striker?
Yeah.
Who would you go for? Would you go for a false nine, maybe?
I mean, we all respect for Füllkrug, but he is not the striker that made you win titles.
Yes, no? Absolutely.
So I don't want to offend him, for sure. He's a good player, but he's not a world-class striker.
It's not your Mario Gomez or your closer. It's not of that quality.
To win titles, you need world-class strikers. Mm. You need like a formation where you have three or four key players and the rest just makes the team complete, you know?
Absolutely.
And I'm missing that in the German national team. I mean, maybe if Kroos come back, you will have good midfielders. That's good. We have Manuel Neuer back. It's good also. But who's the striker? Who's going to change the game? Who's going to win the game last minute, for instance?
Exactly. Who's going to be the one that's going to pounce onto the goal?
I can't answer this question right now because we don't have this kind of player.
You can't even put Adeyemi there because he's been off form and injured this season.
No. Adeyemi for sure not.
And someone who you right mentioned now, last season, sure Moukoko, he's still not up to the standards of Borussia Dortmund either.
Never.
It's looking bleak right now.
We don't have this player. We don't have this player. So what you can do, you can try to replace one player by three maybe.
Yes.
Like you told Sané, maybe in his best, in his prime, if he's going to be in his prime. Musiala in his prime and Wirtz in his prime, maybe. So that you don't have like this classic number nine.
Yes.
But you have three players that are really fast, really strong, really technique. But I don't know if this is going to work out.
Starting Thomas Müller. That's a good way of going about it.
Thomas Müller, I know you're a fan.
I know you have reservations about him, but maybe there's some life in him yet. He's the only player to win 500 career games for Bayern Munich this century.
He's the face of Bayern Munich, without any doubt. Mm. And what he did in his career is outstanding. But for me, like, if you consider the technical way he plays, or like, if you consider football as a skill, you know,
yes,
his skills of football are like not on top. Müller is like, he has a good timing. And what I told you, he's unpredictable. Because
his positioning as well.
Yeah, his movements are not typically like the typical movements of a striker.
Yes.
But this makes him unpredictable. And this is what makes him strong. And of course, his charisma and stuff, because this puts into his like player profile as well.
Definitely.
Is a big impact for the team.
Definitely. Right. Final question, because we are wrapping up now as well. Where do you think Germany will finish in the European Championships?
Oh my gosh. I'll make myself like unpopular in Germany when I say this, but
it's okay. I won't release it until we're in Germany.
Maximum is round of 16 or quarterfinals, to be honest.
Okay. Now, I know it's not looking popular in Germany right now, but
same for Italy as well, huh? So
it's true. But Italy, you never know with them. They could go all the way like they did. Beating England in their home country in their own stadium.
I mean, it's already a wonder that they qualified. So
it's true. They had striker problems
they
as well. They got a striker
so much
from
luck
Argentina
in the last game of the qualifiers. It was crazy.
I don't get how they did it.
Oh my gosh.
England dominated both games, home and away, and then they just scraped through.
England is going for the title. France is going for the title. For
England.
Sure.
England, if Harry Kane and Bellingham stay fit, then we've got a good opportunity.
Yeah,
but
for sure.
I think what we'll do to end the season, I don't know. I don't know, because we have issues with Rashford, Grealish on the left wing. So it's just, we need the right players to continue staying fit. And that's the problem with England. Every single season, we always have injuries before the tournament, which is really worrying.
But who or which team doesn't have this problem? I mean, every
France.
National team has key players.
Mm.
But okay, put out Mbappé of France.
Kolo Muani, you then got...
Yeah, but they're not
Marcus
Mbappé's
Thuram
level.
Yes, true. No one will be Mbappé's level because he's on a different level completely, which is great as well. But I think what we'll do, Valentina, just before we end the podcast, is I will officially invite you to a European Championship preview podcast later this season. So when the domestic season's over, when you finish working your wonders in the Champions League as well, as you do as well, we'll have a full-on conversation about the European Championships. Does that sound good?
Yeah, sounds great.
That's perfect. But yeah, I know you've got to hop off now, but I want to say thank you very much for your time, your efforts and your kind words of wisdom as you've been giving me all season, which has been fantastic. And I appreciate the work that you've been doing. Again, it's ridiculous the work that you do, but it's very, very appreciated from our side as well. Like
thank
I said
you so
as well.
Much.
No, you're very welcome. But yeah, I've got your closing message. Quarterfinals for Germany. It's going to be good fun. Everyone do follow Valentina Macieri on her social medias. Do give her some praise and appreciation for being one of the best football presenters in European football right now. And for me, one of the best in the world, because not just because she comes onto Friday Night Counterattack, but because she presents in different languages consistently. That's such a rare skill to have. I'm very, very happy that.
Thank you so much.
No, it's very welcome. But everyone, thank you very much for your time. Valentina, thank you very much for your time. And I'll see you soon. Take care.
See you.
And there we go for part two of episode 168 on Friday Night Counterattack. We are here, we are rocking and we are rolling, because as I mentioned before, after this week is going to be the beginning of Ramadan. So we are going to be taking a bit of a break from podcasting, but we aren't going to be breaking from our social media content that we will be continuing to build. As we know for a fact, all of you love it and you get engaged with it. You love to comment, whether it's positive or negative, whether it's sexist or whether it's racist, you still tend to do it and we still tend to shut you up as well, which is quite funny in terms of what we've been doing so far this season. So to finish off this episode, we are going to be talking humbly about our three teams as well. There was meant to be a fourth team, but someone stuck at the office and he shall remain nameless, because he tends to remain nameless unless Aston Villa are playing, but he shall remain nameless as well. Back from her holiday in Mexico, had a fantastic time away and has been following La Liga this season to a T, who is following Barcelona's current injury crisis, which is, we're going to have an argument at the end of the season, Sarah, about how many injuries all of our teams have had. We've had it worse, you've had it worse, we just don't know who's had it worse. But once again, Sarah Pararia joins the show. How are you doing today, Sarah? It's good to see you again, my friend.
Yeah, I'm good. Good to see both of you guys too. And actually, now that I think of it, the three of our teams have really been hit by injuries. Now that I'm looking at the two of you thinking, oh yeah. Yeah, it's not been great. Not been great football-wise, but holiday was good. Happy to be back. And yeah, hoping for some good results in the coming weeks. Got a second leg against Napoli next week for Barca. So stressful times.
I'm ready for that one more than anything, because I'm looking at it. I'm thinking Napoli are looking good with their third manager of the season. But with Barcelona as well, there's always that case of home leg, second leg. Barcelona, there's always a bit of magic there. Not at the Nou Camp this time, but at the Olympic Stadium in Barcelona. So that's going to be a tough tie indeed, but that's something that we'll get onto later on. But I'm really excited to talk more about it with you as well, Sarah, and someone who's joining the podcast again for the first time in 2024. Is that right, Travis? Have you been ducking us for a year?
I think you might be right, you know. Yeah. It sounds like a long time, but I think you are right.
It's okay. You've been amazing at Football Crossbar Challenge over the last coming weeks since we've been playing football together, which is good fun. Good way to spend our days off as well, which is great indeed. And you're becoming a much better goalkeeper against my elite shooting, which I'm now practicing week in, week out, as I am the reincarnation of David Beckham, just with brown skin. But it is what it is as well. But Travis, good to have you back on, my friend. Good to see you as well. We're going to start off by talking all about, you know what, we'll start ladies first. Sarah, let's talk about Barcelona. So our main topic today is just reviewing the season so far, because when we come back from to recording in a month's time, a lot will have changed. There'll be an international break. There will be more injuries, more devastation, more ups and more downs for all of our teams respectively. More downs for Man United than ups, I can definitely say, on the pitch as well. But Sarah, let's start ahead with what we've got so far this season. So realistically speaking, we've got a few topics of conversation to go through. But first of all, I'd really want to get your honest opinion to your season so far. How has it been for you being a Barcelona fan? Is it where you expected to be from the beginning of the season? And where do you think Barcelona can end up finishing this season? Because it's looking tough, but you've also got a few opportunities to kind of sneak into that second, maybe even hunt in the title race one last time, I would say, because Barcelona aren't too far away from Real Madrid on points. But what's your kind of opinion being a Barcelona fan?
Yeah, it's been shit, I'll be honest. Listen,
the start, did not expect that at all, my days.
I mean, I'm going to be honest. Like, the start of the season, there was so much hope, as there always is. And, you know, it's the hope that kills us, as we say in football. But we won La Liga last year. Xavi came in and around November, turned the team around. It looked like, you know, they were going to do something. It looked like maybe back to their old ways. And then sooner than later, it was a kind of disaster once again. Now Xavi's obviously leaving and Barca are in third. You know, they might be kicked out of the Champions League as soon as next week. They're already out of the Copa del Rey. It's not been good. And you mentioned injuries at the top of the show have hit Barca so badly. especially because a team that's dealing with such financial crisis, it's not like they can just go out and buy anyone either. So it's been really bad. Predictions for the end of the season is honestly finish second. Yep. In La Liga, if you finish second, you still are granted 5 million euros. And that for Barca is massive. Like, I think in the grand scheme of football, we don't think 5 million is really worth anything. But with a team that's really suffering so much from all these like economic situations, they need that. And also still being Barcelona, being one of the biggest clubs in world football, you have to finish second. You have to. Like, that is what it is. I think they aren't that far from Real Madrid in terms of points, but Real Madrid just look too good. And I just don't think they'll give away that many points. We've seen them drop points this past weekend, of course, to Valencia, but I don't think it's going to happen that consistently that Barca are going to be able to make that gap kind of disappear completely. So I think for them, they have to go second place and basically get second place, figure out who your coach is going to be next season, because we still don't know, and then have a really busy, hopefully, summer transfer window.
Because the thing with Barcelona from outside looking in, before we get onto the next kind of topics, is you've always had a really small squad, but you've always had a really small squad of really good first team players that if someone was to be dropped out, you've always got an adequate replacement. Because I looked at it, seeing how Ousmane Dembele got sold in the summer to PSG, Lamine Yamal's come in. But again, he's been fantastic to watch this season, a breath of fresh air from what I've seen. But he's not as reliable, or even, dare I say, Rafinha's not been as reliable on the wing as well. It's been quite difficult to see who's going to be supplying the goals and the assists when, for example, Lewandowski, who's been out of form this season, has been out of touch, like you mentioned, all season long, Sarah. So it's one of those things where normally you've had such reliable players up front, like even last season, it's such a reliable front three to look at. And then this season, injury after injury after injury, Pedri getting injured, De Jong getting injured. The injury that's just mounting up right now for Barcelona is intense. And like you said before, a Champions League tie awaits against Napoli in the second leg at the Olympic Stadium in Barcelona. But getting onto that, Sara, as well, I wanted to ask you, who has been your most impressive Barcelona player to watch this season? And then following up with, who's been your least impressive Barcelona player to watch this season? And don't you dare say Andreas Christensen, for obvious reasons.
Your favorite player. No, you mentioned him, though, and I think it has to be Lamine Yamal. I mean, we've spoken about him time and time again on this podcast, but
absolutely,
he's 16 years old and basically become a starter, kicked Rafinha out of his position to take over. Youngest player to ever score in La Liga, youngest player to ever score in the Champions League. And yeah, like I said, a starter for Barcelona. I think it has to be him. He's been absolutely spectacular, especially when you have players like Lewandowski falling off, Gavi and Pedri picking up injuries. Ferran Torres never really kind of figuring out if he's a Barca player, if he's not. Like, it's like when he plays for Spain, he's completely different than when he plays for Barca. So I think I would have to say Lamine Yamal. And when you think about that, you're like, well, that's fantastic. You have a 16-year-old. That's your best player. The future is bright. But how is a 16-year-old bossing, you know, these kind of veteran players off the pitch like Rafinha? So I think for me, Rafinha might have to be, I don't want to say the worst player, because he's not, like, talent-wise, he's not the worst player. But when you've lost your position to a 16-year-old, that's your form's bad. Like, it was really poor, you know, got him last year. And coming from Leeds, you know, we were thinking, oh, okay, this guy, like, he was nasty at Leeds, of course. Like, we've seen what he's able to do, that cut in, his kind of signature move. But it just never really clicked properly at Barcelona. And he wasn't given enough time. You know, being at a club like Barca, things move quickly, and Lamine Yamal took over a spot just like that.
Can I suggest a thought for João Cancelo? Because João Cancelo, a couple of years ago, was considered one of the greatest fullbacks in the modern era, with the way he could play right back and left back, inverted, how he had this technical ability beyond a lot of his fellow compatriots as well, for rather Portugal or even at Manchester City as well. He's played 23 games this season, scored 2 goals and 3 assists. I suggested, I thought he'd be a pretty good player to be starting a lot for Barcelona. And you and Suki, I believe, said at the beginning of the season that Alejandro Balde has been a much better player ahead of him at left back. But what's kind of gone on with João Cancelo this season? Has he been underperforming? Has he been overperforming? Or does he just not suit Barcelona? Because I know you want to kind of sign him on a permanent deal, him and João Felix, from what I last remember. But is there something going on with João Cancelo that you think, you know what, he may not be worth our time at Barcelona and reinvest somewhere else?
No, I don't think so. I think he just got injured. Like, he came and he got injured almost right away. But if you're asking me, I would take him over Felix in a heartbeat. João Cancelo is absolutely versatile. And then, of course, Alejandro Balde getting injured as well. Cancelo has now been stepping up and playing in that position, but he's another player that can create something in front of the net as well as, of course, defend, which Barca needs. So for me, I think João Cancelo just hasn't been able to play as many games as maybe we'd like, but I think that's due to injury. And I think he still has been one of the best players for Barca. But if we're looking at consistency, you have to give it to Lamine Yamal. But I would love for Cancelo to stay at Barcelona. I actually do think he's a very well-fitted player for Barcelona, but I don't think he just hasn't had the best season in terms of fitness.
Yeah, I'm looking at it as well. It's just been inconsistent, which hasn't been kind of his style as well. And in the next couple of weeks as well, you've got Atletico Madrid away, you've got Real Madrid away, you've got Valencia at home, Girona away, which will be a do or die in the month of April as well. Real Sociedad and Sevilla is your last game of the season. So you've got some really big games. You've got some really big games coming up as well. So it's going to be very difficult to see how Barcelona continue on their hunt for the second position, or maybe even still challenging for the title race, because that El Clasico may be one of the biggest El Clasicos we'd have seen. And like I said a couple of weeks ago, I really want to see El Clasico in the Champions League. I really want to see how that would look.
We all wanted to see El Clasico in the Champions League, but it pains me to say it. El Clasico isn't what it was a few years ago, if I'm honest. Like, it used to be the two best teams in the world with the best players in the world. And I'm not just talking about Messi and Ronaldo. Like, lately, it hasn't lived up to its hype. So I don't know. I mean, of course, you want to dream about that El Clasico once upon a time. But I think right now, if we were to see El Clasico in the Champions League, I mean, Barca's getting absolutely steamrolled if I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah, it's true. Bellingham would be on fire in that El Clasico as well, having the Champions League, having that CBS interview afterwards like he always does. He'd be loving that occasion.
Well, we saw it like La Liga in the first Clasico of the season. I think it was in October. Like, Real won, I think it was 3-1, and it was just kind of like, yeah. But yeah. What was worse is that I wasn't even that pissed as a Barca fan. It's my biggest rival. But I knew going into it, I've seen these two clubs. They're just not on par with each other right now. So it isn't living up to like what El Clasico used to be.
Definitely. It's true. It's kind of like I'll save Man United. It would have been a good segue into Manchester United, but I'll save mine till last. Travis, go ahead, my friend. Any final thoughts on Barcelona before going ahead with talking about Tottenham Hotspur and their season so far and Ange Postecoglou?
I think the only thing I'd say, it's probably quite depressing for La Liga, but I think what Sara's saying about how the El Clasico has kind of fallen off, if I'm brutally honest, I think that's just La Liga generally. I think the league generally is just not as good as it used to be. I think the overall quality of the sides in that division is just not at that level anymore. Like Sara was saying, Real Madrid and Barca used to be the destination for the best players in the world. And I think that's still the case with Real Madrid. I think it probably would still be the case with Barca if they could afford any of the best players in the world. Mm. But I do think it's beginning to shift. I think the Haaland one was major. I think Haaland picking Man City over someone like Barca, someone like Real Madrid, I think that was major. Whether that was more to do with Madrid shifting their focus to Mbappe, I don't know.
Or the Pep influence as well.
Possibly, yeah. But I just think that the days of, you know, the Galacticos at Real Madrid and, you know, a similar level and caliber of players at Barcelona, I think we're starting to see the end of that, really.
But do you think that changes with Mbappe going to Madrid this summer?
Maybe. I don't think it's a guarantee. My problem with Mbappe is obviously wonderfully gifted player, unbelievable talent, but we've seen him play for so long in this PSG team, and on the very biggest of stages in the Champions League, they've always fallen short, even with him. And, you know, this Real Madrid team is very, very strong anyway. Does Mbappe make a mass? I mean, he's one of the best players in the world. You'd always choose him, wouldn't you? But with people like Vinicius Jr., with Bellingham, I don't know if he comes in and he's the absolute difference maker. I don't think he takes, you know, I don't think he moves the yardstick for Real Madrid. Maybe for La Liga. I mean, having a player of that caliber in your league is always good PR. But I don't know. Maybe it's the last Galactico signing for Real Madrid. Maybe it'll be the start of a new breed. We'll never know, but we'll have to wait and see.
I just think, sorry, Hams.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I don't think after what he did in that World Cup final that we can't assume Mbappe like isn't that guy. And like we're talking about that French team totally stacked, right? But they didn't show up to that final. None of them showed up. Mbappe said halfway through a match, all right, guys, get in. I'm going to score a hat trick. Do you know what I mean? Like, I know what you're saying about PSG, but Mbappe still is that guy.
Correct. Yeah, I agree with you. And I think you could say that about quite a few games in the 2018 World Cup and the 2022 World Cup, to be fair. But we've not really seen that at club level, have we? I mean, he's obviously had good performances in the Champions League, but he's never really put PSG on his back and got them kind of over the line, at least in my opinion.
I think from PSG anyways. I think that's my point, is I think it's a PSG thing. We've seen Messi go there, and we've seen what he's been able to do with Barca and like national team level. Same with Neymar. To me, it seems
Neymar was the closest, in my opinion. When he got to the final, that was Neymar's kind of run in that lockdown season. That's when he was doing really well against Lyon, against RB Leipzig as well. He's pretty good as well in that run. Champions League final against Bayern Munich. Mbappe had the chance. He had the chance to finish it, but he couldn't against Manuel Neuer. So
I think that's the closest
I'd say out of the three. Neymar's the one that nearly got them over the line, but it wasn't Mbappe at the time.
No, for sure. But I think we need to see Mbappe at a different club. Like, I think that's the biggest thing, because we know what
totally he's... agree. Yeah. 100%.
So I'm scared as a Barca fan that him, if he goes to Madrid, like, we haven't even seen it yet. Like, we've seen little glimpses, but a consistent Mbappe, I think that's where that could show up at a team like Real Madrid.
If he completely fulfills his potential there, I mean, you could be talking about La Liga becoming like the Bundesliga. I think, you know, you could talk about Real Madrid winning the next 10. I think that it could be lights out for Barca, I think.
They're building a team around young players. I said this like a couple of weeks ago, but I think that this team could be better than the Galacticos because they're building a team that's so much younger that it's kind of like looking to the future. We're talking Bellingham, we're talking Vinny, Mbappe, Rodrigo, Fede, Camavinga, Tchouaméni. Like, that's terrifying.
That is terrifying when you list them like that. Wow.
The Avengers have assembled.
La Liga, but honestly, best of luck in the Champions League. If you think any other team is winning, Madrid are about to win like their 20th in a row if this is what happens. Like, it's guys, I'm scared. Genuinely.
I'm more scared for you, Sara, because the facts of the matter is, not from a Barcelona perspective, but you mentioned it elsewhere as well. What happens if Alfonso Davies goes to Real Madrid? What happens there for you?
I have to burn his jersey that I own.
I said you could send it to me. You could send it over to me.
I'll send it to you so we're not wasting, you know, any quality jerseys, but there's no chance. I'm done with him after that.
But that's literally looking at that team and you're like, even with Hakimi being linked back to Real Madrid as well, you've got a backup of Theo Hernandez who's also being linked to Real Madrid as an alternative to Alfonso Davies. And you're looking at it thinking Real Madrid are looking like that team once again on paper, but I think at the moment they are looking a lot better than the Galacticos of the early 2000s. Maybe not playing the most attractive football at this moment in time, but getting results done in La Liga. And it's going to be very worrying unless something special happens at Barcelona. And we've seen before when something special happens at Barcelona, it lasts a very, very long time. So for Barcelona fans, don't give up hope just yet, because you never know who's going to come through in the academy, who's going to be shining for them as well, and who your next manager is going to be. Sorry, that's a very exciting prospect as well. Remember, I'm team Thiago Motta all the way. So if it's Rafa Marquez, I don't mind, but Thiago Motta would be playing a lot more exciting football for Barcelona as well. Travis, talk to me. Spurs, it's been an up and down season, but mostly up season for Spurs. Again, no trophy for you, but you're playing a very entertaining and attractive style of play, if I do say so myself. It's one of the teams that a lot of people do like watching now as a neutral fan, or just even just watching it on their highlights as well. But what I need to ask you going forward is, how impressed have you been since Ange Postecoglou has come into Spurs since last summer, since losing Harry Kane, since getting some of these younger players? And how impressed have you been with Spurs and Ange Postecoglou this season, Travis?
I've been very impressed. I think the first 10 or 11 games it was that we were unbeaten, we looked like an absolute super team, and I couldn't see anything stopping it.
The group chat was unbearable at that time. I needed it to stop.
Every week. But we had obviously that game against Chelsea where we just went completely off the rails, and I think that Nico did derail us for a good couple of months.
Spurs is crazy when you're looking at Nico Jackson suing. That was an odd way of celebrating a hat trick. Odd guy.
Yeah, it's the worst hat trick of all time as well. I think we can firmly put that in the first position for worst hat trick ever scored in football history, I believe.
So shameless.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, look, I'm happy. That's all I can really say. I mean, I feel the last few years when we've had Conte and Nuno and Jose, it's just been dire. Even when we've been winning, it's not been fun. We've not been a joy to watch. We've just essentially been hoping that Harry Kane or Heung-Min Son are going to pull us out of the mud. And that's pretty much the only time we ever got a win. With this team, the way it is now, I feel like we have contributors from all over the pitch. We've seen Adoghi pop up with goals this season. Porro, Romero is scoring a lot of goals from centre-back. It's crazy. I think he's got 4 or 5 this season already, which is mental.
Mm.
Even the midfielders as well. I mean, Saar has chipped in with a few goals. I think he looks an absolutely phenomenal player for the future.
I predicted that in the World Cup. Remember, I said Saar was a fantastic player for Spurs, and he came through, unfortunately for me, but really fortunately for Spurs fans as well. But one question that Saar and I answered a couple of weeks ago, we discussed it amongst ourselves, actually. Who would you want to build your team around going into the summer or next season? So Saar was speaking about Barcelona, I was speaking about Manchester United. But the question I wanted to ask you, your main question today, Travis, from me, is who do you build around at Spurs next season or over this season as well? Because Son is hitting his early 30s, 32, 33 years of age as well. James Maddison is injury prone, so it's always in and out the side, and you can't really rely upon him as much as you want to as well. But who would you, Travis, build around at Spurs going forward, or who should Ange build around at Spurs?
It's difficult because I want to say Son. He's our best player by an absolute country mile.
Absolutely.
And he's the only person in that squad who will be a consistent goal scorer. And that is, I think, our only real issue in this team right now, is that if we lose Son, we just have no kind of feed for goals. We've got no... I mean, Richarlison stepped up massively in the Asian Cup. He scored quite a few goals, something like 10 goals in 9 games. It was a ridiculous run he went on. But I don't think that's going to last. I can't see any longevity in Richarlison scoring a goal a game. I just don't think that's going to happen. Don't think anyone would believe that. For me, I think we've got to build the squad around these young players. I'm not going to compare us to Real Madrid, of course not, but a little bit similar.
They wear to white, what, so it's a similar shirt. That
yeah, same thing. Well. Yeah, same club. But similar to what Saro was saying about Real Madrid, we've got a lot of young players in this squad. Porro, Adoghi, Van de Ven, Saar, all these guys that we're naming, they're all, you know, sort of under 23 and have got massive futures ahead of them. We just need to make sure that we keep them playing regular minutes, keep them fit, keep them developing. And I think what I want to see is, I don't want us to be building around one player as such.
Okay.
I don't want to be the Harry Kane team or the James Maddison team. I want us to be a very, very good football team. And I don't want it to be a case of, oh, well, Kane's not playing today, or Maddison isn't playing today, so they're going to struggle. If you look at Man City, for example, when they lose Haaland, they still play the same way. They're still pretty much just as good. Liverpool, when they lose Salah, obviously they've lost him for the entirety of January and February, I think, really, from
AFCON as well.
AFCON,
yeah.
And him being injured. And they've, you know, maintained a title race. They're still top of the league, I believe.
Unfortunately.
And I think the three clubs that are at the top at the moment, Arsenal, City and Liverpool, I think they can all say that if they lose one or two big, big players, they're not going to falter. I don't think we can say that. And I think we have faltered in the last couple of months when we've been missing Maddison, Romero, Son. I mean, look, we've had a ridiculous injury crisis similar to Barca, similar to United. We mentioned it earlier. So I don't think it's normal, the amount of injuries and suspensions that we've had. But I would like to see us be a squad and a team and a unit rather than, like I say, the James Maddison team or the Harry Kane team or whoever it might be. I don't really want to build around one player.
Yeah, that's fair enough. And going into Spurs as well for this season, who's been the player that's impressed you the most and who's been the least impressive? So most impressive first. And I think I've got an idea who it is. It might be a defender for you personally, because you've spoken about him a lot this season as well. But again, Travis, who's been your most impressive Spurs player to watch this season?
I think you think I'm going to say Van de Ven, and he's probably a close second. But for me, our by far our best player this season has been Vicario.
Seriously.
Honestly, he's just, if you watch Tottenham regularly, like I do, we would be in so much worse of a position without him. The way we play, we're going to give away chances. We're just so open and so free-flowing that we're going to give away chances to the other team. And the idea is we'll score more, hopefully.
Like me on PlayStation, I just concede like four goals and I'll score five. It's not nice at all. It's not nice playing on FIFA these days. I'm losing my powers, everyone. It's not nice. It's not nice. I can't be playing these days.
And this is the thing with Vicario is we won't concede four or five because we know we've got him between the sticks and he's a really, really safe pair of hands. I mean, last season, when we had Lloris for the first half and he was just way past it, and then he obviously had the big falling out with all the coaching staff and stuff during the Newcastle game, and then from the end of the season until the end of the season, we were playing Forster, who is, you know, a great servant to the game, but is like again just way past it. He's this thing. He's too big. He can't dive.
He looks like a rugby player or American football player for other people's context as well. He's just huge and he's stocky. It's crazy. He has no neck.
All you have to do against Forster is put it literally either side of him because he can't dive. He just can't dive anymore. Mm. And honestly, when I think of the way we play this season, if we had either of those two in goal, Lloris or Forster, we conceded hundreds, absolutely hundreds. So yeah, for me, Vicario, I mean, he's just saved us on so many occasions.
Definitely. And who's been your least impressive player to watch this season? Has it been someone like a Timo Werner, Kulusevski, or Brennan Johnson? These are players that I see you not really complaining about, but wanting more from them and expecting more from them, given the caliber of talent you have in attack as well. So who'd it be from that point of view, Travis?
I'm not going to say Werner. I think since he's come in, I've been very impressed with him, and I can see, sounds daft saying it about a 27-year-old or whatever he is, but I can see potential there, and I can see that if he gets a real confidence and a run of form, he will be a fantastic player. And I think in our system, he can be a fantastic player. He's always been one of those players who needs a few chances to score. And I think he will get that at Tottenham. He scored his first goal for us at Palace at the weekend. And I'm hoping that he can now click on. And if we manage to get a run of form out of him for 15 million or whatever the buy option is at the end of the loan, it'd be an absolute bargain.
You'd buy Timo Werner if you could.
I think so. Yeah, I think if he continues to play the way he's playing, absolutely. I wouldn't put him as a starter. I think the plan for next season should be Son, Kulusevski and somebody else, and then Werner as the backup.
Yeah.
But for 15 million for a Champions League winning player who's going to play as a backup anyway, you can't argue with it. And at the end of the day, his time at Chelsea and the way that his reputation is in England right now, it must be traumatic for him. So he's got to be given some time to grow his confidence, grow his stock, and show what kind of player he can be again. And I think he's already started to do that at Spurs. I've been fairly impressed with him. I'm also not going to say Brennan Johnson because he's very young. He's been in and out of the team. He's had injuries. And he has shown glimpses. And I think, again, similar to Werner, I think if he gets a run of confidence or run of form, he'll be a very good player for us. I would say the person I've been most disappointed with this season is Kulusevski.
Yeah.
I think his first 18 months at the club, he was absolutely unreal. And I think we missed out on Luis Diaz, so we signed him instead. And at the time, for the first 18 months or so, I thought, bullet dodged, honestly, because Kulusevski just looked insane.
The missing piece of the puzzle, in a way. Son left, Kane middle, Kulusevski right.
Exactly, absolutely. And the way he plays does or did really suit Kane and Son because he's creative. And the problem that we had before that with Kane was that he was a great goal scorer, but he was also the only quality creator in our team as well. So you almost wanted another Kane to set up chances for the goal scoring Kane. And we thought Kulusevski would be the answer. Since the first 18 months, I think he's been very hit and miss, very stop start. And I think what he struggled with this season is having a set position. I think with these injuries that we've had, we've played him out on the right. He's had to fill in the middle and sort of the James Maddison role a couple of times this season as well. I think he's shifted around a few times and he can't just really get a run of form, but we need to see it from him really, because the way that we're moving forward, you know, we can't carry passengers. You know, I think for the last couple of years at Tottenham, you can play, you know, average performances week in, week out, below average even, and you know that you're going to get in the team because everyone's doing the same thing. But now, you know, if Kulusevski has a bad run of form, we've got Brennan Johnson, who can fill in. Obviously, Timo Werner now. I think we will sign another attacker in the summer as well. So obviously, that's more competition for him. So I think he's been my biggest disappointment this season. But I don't think he's been our worst player as such. But probably the one that I was expecting the most from that has delivered the least, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's fair enough. That's understandable as well. Sarah, do you have any questions for Travis regarding Spurs this season from your point of view?
Yeah, what's the prediction here? Where are you guys finishing in the table?
Ooh.
I do think that, look, with the Premier League right now, we've got three super teams. Liverpool, Arsenal and Man City are just such a level above everybody else. Whether it's bias or not, I do genuinely believe we're the fourth best team. I think we're the best of the rest after you kind of look below the big gap.
You're saying you're not as good as Arsenal this season?
As much as it pains me to say it, no, we're not. But equally, what I would say is that they are so much further down the line of their project than we are. Mm-hmm. And I think
you're only in year one and you haven't even completed year one yet.
Exactly. And I think if you look at the squad that Ange inherited and the squad that Arteta inherited, both absolutely terrible. And in the first two seasons, Arteta finished 8th and 8th.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'd like to think we're not going to finish 8th this season. We look pretty much like we're nailed on for 4th or 5th, hopefully, barring any kind of late season collapse. Not that that's out of the question with Tottenham. We know what we're like.
Very Spursy.
But yeah, I would like to think now that we've got everybody fit again, Son's just coming back. We're starting to see Madison back fully fit and available again. I think now we've pretty much got our first team again. I'd like to see us put a run together and finish 4th. I do think we're better than Villa. If I'm completely honest with you, I think the only reason they're above us in the table right now is because we've had so many absentees over the last couple of months. I think that's allowed them to bridge the gap to us. But I think first 11 versus first 11, I do think we're the better team out of the two. So I would like to think 4th is where we're going to finish this season, hopefully back in the Champions League.
Nicely
something
done.
I told Salim, sorry, last time we spoke about Villa was that they have such a tough schedule ahead. Now, you guys are behind Villa 5 points, but you got a game in hand. But just looking ahead to your schedule, okay, you guys got to play Villa this weekend, obviously.
Yeah.
You have West Ham, you have Newcastle at St. James's, you have City, you have Arsenal, you have Liverpool back to back to back. Your schedule is not looking too much better. So is it going to come down to, like, it could be this weekend, whoever wins, making up those points in between?
Good question.
This game is massive this weekend, absolutely. I think we have to beat them. We just have to. I think if we don't beat them, you can pretty much write off top four because, like you say, that run of City, Arsenal and Liverpool back to back to back is just brutal. And that's going to take such a toll mentally and physically. But what I would say is, again, I genuinely believe with our first team available, I do think we're capable of beating all of those teams. What you've got to remember is in the first 10 weeks of the season, or a little bit longer, I think, in the case of City, we have played all of those teams and not lost any of those games. We beat Liverpool. We drawn to Arsenal away from home.
Luis Diaz goal.
Yeah, but we still beat them. And we drew to City in a game that we were missing players and we really should have lost. So, we really should have won. We threw it away. We gave a goal away stupidly.
Good game, though.
It was a fantastic game. Absolute barnstormer. But I think what you've got to remember is, like I say, yeah, these teams are in unreal form, but none of them have beaten us this season. So I'd like to think that we can turn out a result against one or two of them, even if it is just draws, just to kind of keep in touch with the top four. But yeah, you're not wrong. That schedule is grim. I mean, West Ham, we're their cup final every season. It's so annoying. Every time we play them, they just turn up. You know, they could be rubbish for the other 36 games of the season, but they'll always play like prime Barcelona against us. It's absolutely infuriating. I'll tell you one thing, actually. I'm getting very off topic now and just digressing a little bit. But the game we played against West Ham earlier this season was, I think, probably one of the most frustrating football matches I've ever watched in my life. We absolutely dominated them and played them off the park for pretty much the full 90. and they scored the two jammiest goals I think I've ever seen and beat us 2-1. So, I mean, if that happens again, I might start watching cricket, I guess. But
that's the same. That's the same story every fan has against West Ham this season. I've said that about Man United losing to West Ham at the Olympic Stadium. Arsenal fans have said that about losing to West Ham at the Emirates, and you did that at home as well, at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium as well. So that's just how West Ham play.
Yeah, I think this is the complaint that West Ham fans have. You know, I've seen a lot of discussion between West Ham fans about wanting Moyes out. You've seen the banners at London Stadium and all this sort of stuff. And I think from the outside looking in, it's easy to say, well, you've just won a European trophy. You're in a very good position in the league. You're still in Europe. What have you got to complain about? But I think West Ham fans will say exactly what Hams has just said, that, yeah, we're winning games and we're getting points, but the football's absolutely disgusting.
And they charge an arm and a leg for their tickets as well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they've got to pay for the stadium somehow, haven't they?
It's true. The government can't pay for it anymore. It's all crazy to think about that. But again, London prices are ridiculous for tickets for mediocre teams like West Ham as well. Shouldn't be paying £90 a ticket. Not good. Not good at all. But yeah, that's all from me regarding Tottenham as well. Sara, nicely done there as well. Travis, your topics are Manchester United. You've been speaking to me about it all week. Fire away. If you've got any questions, I've got my little checklist here as well. So my honest thoughts of the season so far. I still thought we'd have been competing for top four at Manchester United this season. Technically, we're not out of it, but mentally, we've checked out of it when you're looking at Manchester United. We're just not there anymore in terms of being battered. And I'm not talking about losing to Manchester City away, because that was kind of expected. I'm talking more against Fulham or scraping a win against Luton. These are games where you're struggling to see what we're doing as a team. You're struggling at what Erik ten Hag is doing on the training pitch. You're struggling at where we're going wrong with our injuries, with our incomings, with our outcomings as well. You're looking at the fact that Manchester United have three young left backs out on loan, and we haven't recalled any of them since our left backs have been injured. And we had a left back on loan from Spurs, Sergio Reguilón, and we cancelled his loan.
Can we just quickly mention something about Reguilón? As a Tottenham fan,
go for it.
He has infuriated me. I've always loved him, right? I've always loved him. He might not be the best left back in the world, but he's just sweet. He's like a puppy, and I just love him.
That's an odd thing to say about a regular.
Everything you see about him on social media and stuff, it's all just quite wholesome and nice. And he posts all these lovely photos with his missus and all this sort of stuff. And he just seems like a really nice guy. I've always really rooted for him. But after what I saw recently, he's done. He's done for me at Tottenham.
Tell us what he did.
He's contracted to Tottenham Hotspur, currently on loan at Brentford, so has ties with two current Premier League clubs, and he's watching the United game on his Instagram story, posting red hearts and red symbols and circles all over his Instagram story, like he loves Man United. You were there for 6 months, mate. They didn't even want you. They got rid of you. They sent you packing halfway through the loan, and you're saying you love him while you're still contracted to Tottenham Hotspur and playing for a second Premier League club at the same time. Honestly, I think you can tell how angry I am about this. I'm really, really not happy. I really kind of wanted to see him do well at Brentford and then get integrated back into our squad next season as a backup to Udogie, because I do think he could be a quality backup left back. But now I'm done with him. Cancel the contract, rip it up. I don't care. I didn't even want any money for him. Just get him out of my sight. I never want to see him at Tottenham again.
Travis, you're forgetting one big thing about Serge Reguilón.
Go on.
He used to play for Real Madrid and he played for Atletico Madrid. He has no loyalty. You're looking at Reguilón. He's played for both teams in Madrid right now. It's crazy. And now he could probably play for Arsenal and be like, oh yeah, I love Arsenal. He's one of those guys that just kisses the badge for no reason.
Wherever they'll play him, wherever they'll pay him. That's
a saying. I like that saying, Sara.
He screams of a Chelsea signing. I will put money on him playing for Chelsea one day.
Yeah, Tom Bowley listens to our podcast, so he's probably going to be buying him for 50 million.
That's all Bowley needs. Okay, they said it on the podcast. Yeah, I'll go get him. That's all he needs.
Do you know that? Tom Bowley
actually... get Richarlison as well, mate. Two for one.
He listens to podcasts and Twitter spaces and YouTube channels. It's crazy what an actual owner of a football club does. But we're going off topic regarding Todd Bowley. But nice to know he wants to learn about football from the new media, which is good to see as well. But yeah, thoughts on Manchester United to conclude from so far this season. Injuries have blighted us. But even when we've looked at our first team, first game of the season, I went to Old Trafford. We played against Wolves. We had our first team out, literally. And then they were outplayed by Wolves, by Gary O'Neill's Wolverhampton Wanderers. We still won. We scraped to win, as we tend to do most times of the season, without playing great football or good football. The only time I've seen us play great football was against Chelsea at home this season. And Chelsea have been awful in the first half of this season as well. They're only kind of starting to get together now. And even so, they're still 11th. So when you're looking at how Man United are playing great football, is it the manager? Is it the players? Is it because every single season you see a Manchester United manager with a new manager come in, they play great football, then the second season they drop off in quality and in standards and in performance? And it's looking a bit embarrassing right now as a Manchester United fan. And said on the radio this week as well that, again, I still think Erik ten Hag should be backed by our new ownership in Ineos. I think he has the right support system around him coming into the club. When they're actually with him, they can set the standards together. From what I'm looking at with Erik ten Hag as well, last season was fantastic, winning away against Barcelona. We've never done that before. Winning at home to Liverpool after losing 5-0 the season before. Winning at home to Manchester City was a big one as well. But there's all these negatives. Never having lost, 7-0 away at Anfield, 6-3 to Manchester City as well, 3-2 to Arsenal at the Emirates for the last-minute conceded goal. I've never seen us concede so many last-minute goals under any manager besides Erik ten Hag. It's happening time and time and time again. So there are worrying signs, but as I said to you, Travis, and I'll say it to you, Sarah, as well, again, we've said it before this season, there aren't many great alternatives for a Manchester United manager that I want to see the style of play. We're speaking about Thomas Tuchel leaving Bayern Munich. We spoke about that previously. But he doesn't play attractive football. He doesn't play Manchester United brand of football of attacking, free-flowing, getting you off your seat and really working hard. Thomas Tuchel football is being pragmatic. It's making sure that you're not conceding chances, which is great to see. But we've had that under Jose Mourinho, and it's worked well to a time when the football doesn't play good football, when you're not playing good football, it doesn't work well with the fans, and the fans don't appreciate it as well. But those are my initial thoughts on that. Ten Hag for this season and Manchester United for this season. It's very, very difficult. Again, injuries are always going to be there. It's not nice seeing players play out of position, but our young players have been our shining light. And one of my favourite players, as you all know, has been Rasmus Højlund. I've been very, very impressed with him. There is a player in there. We've seen him score an amazing amount of goals in recent times before he got injured. But there's no one to help him. There's no one to support him up front. And it's not looking nice at all. There's a lot of negative press regarding Marcus Rashford. And I'm always going to back Marcus Rashford. He's one of my favourite players at the club. But it's not looking likely that he's going to want to stay come the end of the summer as well. Because it's looking very certain that he could end up moving to PSG. He could be moving abroad to get away from Manchester United, and he could try and get himself a pretty penny elsewhere. But he's not a luxury player. He needs to be playing with a lot of luxury about him, but he's not a luxury player at all. My worst player this season, without
Can I guess? Can we guess? Come on.
Go for it. I'll let you guess. Have some fun with it.
Ashley Anthony.
Travis, are you going to guess as well?
I think if you're talking worst player, has to be Anthony, because he's just atrocious, isn't he? But I think we all know that he's atrocious now, so it's almost not like a thing. For me, I think if you're going down the lines I went down of most disappointing player...
Casemiro.
I was going to say Bruno.
Oh, God, yeah. Just the worst.
I mean, you both got it right with Anthony. He's always going to be disappointing, and... Because he came in with such expectations from the manager. That's what disappoints the fans the most. The fans are listening to every word the manager's saying in every press conference because it's the Manchester United manager. You want to hear what he has to say. When he's saying things that really annoy the fans, when he's saying, oh, Anthony's one of the best in the league over the first 10 yards. First 10 yards of what? Like tracking back. That's not what you're paying £90 million for a winger for. It's not really nice to see how... He continues to back his players. And again, I complain about this every single week. And it's not nice because, again, there's no competition for Andre Onana. He was single-handedly the reason we got knocked out of the Champions League with all those blunders and errors and awful passes that he makes. And it's not been improving our game at all. You're looking at Anthony, who you're looking at... You want him to do well as a Man United fan, but you're not going to get worried if you sell him for £15 million to Freiburg in the summer. If he then goes, he goes, and we're not going to forget about him. But we're going to remember him as one of our worst ever signings, pound for pound, one of the worst in the Premier League history, from my opinion as well. And bringing someone from the younger perspective. But I've really been disappointed with Jadon Sancho as well, just on a personal perspective as well. So Jadon Sancho, but definitely Anthony. You both got it right. It was obviously it's going to be Anthony as well. Realistically speaking, I really need to see what's happening with Jadon Sancho in the summer. We spent a lot of money. Recently, there's an interview with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, former manager, who said, I didn't even get enough time with him to work with him because I wanted him. Spent a year and a half trying to get Jadon Sancho into Manchester United, and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was sacked within 4 months of having Jadon Sancho at the club. And we all know there's a player in Jadon Sancho. We all know that there's a talent there. We all look at Jadon Sancho and think that he is kind of like a 90s or an early 2000s type of winger. When you're looking at him, he can play pop and go football. He can literally just drop a shoulder, play fantastic football. It's not always going to be about attacking and scoring, but he'll be there having a good time and a fun time. And you're looking at it thinking, he's not even doing that at Dortmund. So his confidence is absolutely shattered as well. But I still think there's a player in there. And I still think Erik ten Hag has a lot of things to deal with as well. It's not always going to be his fault, but what you're seeing on the pitch is definitely his fault, because he can get a lot of things right on the training pitch. And he's been billed as one of the best coaches in European football over the last 10 years as well. And I don't think he's been showing that so far at Manchester United. And my last point on Erik ten Hag is the fact that he played such great football at Ajax. And then he said recently, oh, I was brought in not to play Ajax football, but Manchester United football. He got the job on the technicality of actually getting really good players at Ajax to play really good football, then losing to Spurs. And when you're looking at the Ajax team now, who's the most successful out of all of them? De Ligt, Ziyech, De Jong, maybe De Jong, I'd say. Onana definitely isn't. Definitely not at all.
De Jong's probably been the most like consistently high performer of them all.
I'd say so too.
Maybe not like on-pitch success in like the context of what the team has done. But
if Girona finished second, Daily Blind. Sorry, I'm going to throw him out there. Daily Blind has to throw in there as well. Which
what I would say just quickly about Ten Hag is it's funny you mentioned that Spurs game, because the first leg of that game, I've never watched a team that I was so terrified of. I've watched us play great teams, very, very good teams, current Man City, you know, Conte's Chelsea was just an insanely good team as well. And
you beat Real Madrid at Wembley once, I think, as well.
Who, sorry?
Spurs beat Real Madrid at Wembley.
Yes, yeah, just after they won the European Cup.
Yeah.
What I would say about that Ajax team, in that first leg, I'd just never seen a team play in that way, just with the whole 11, well, not the 11, obviously not the goalkeeper, but the whole outfield team so high up the pitch, so aggressive in their press. And it was such a unique style of football that I'd literally never seen. And I think probably what made that tie so difficult for us, and probably you'd say the same about the previous ties with Juventus and Real Madrid prior to them playing us, was that I don't think anybody knew how to play against them. They were just an anomaly. And I remember thinking, when we were linked with Ten Hag, God, I'd love us to play like that. And I'm so glad we didn't get him. I know we had to suffer Nuno and suffer Conte, but looking at him at Man United, I just don't think he's the guy. I think what he will struggle with and what might kill him is, I think, two things. The fact that he's been able to bring in players who are his own players.
Absolutely.
Onana, he had at Ajax, hasn't worked, really. Antony, he had at Ajax, has definitely not worked.
No chance.
There's a few others as well. I think Martinez has worked. I think he's been a very, very good player.
But he's been our best signing, I'd say, under Ten Hag.
Totally agree. Martinez. Yeah, there's probably not much competition for that. But yeah, totally agree. I think his signings will kill him because they're his players. The other thing that might kill him, honestly, is if anybody at Ineos looks at the impact that people like Ange's had at Tottenham, Emery's had at Villa, even lower down the league, Gary O'Neill at Bournemouth. Gary O'Neill at Wolves. Iraola at Bournemouth was going to be my next one on the list.
Yeah.
They've all come in and instantly they've turned the way of the team playing around to their style. And it's not always delivered instant results. Bournemouth went on a terrible run at the start of the season, didn't they? And obviously we've just had a bad patch. But you watch Tottenham and you say, that's an Ange team. You watch Bournemouth, that's an Iriola team. You watch Villa, that's an Emery team. You watch Man United and there's no clear plan. There's no clear style of play. I couldn't tell you if they're a possession-based team, I couldn't tell you if they're a counter-attacking team. I couldn't tell you if they're a high-pressing team. I couldn't really tell you how they're supposed to play because
I couldn't tell you they're a team every week. Watching them play, they don't play like a team at all.
They look like a bunch of 11 guys who you've just pulled out of a lottery and stuck on a football pitch.
The fact that I wanted to go and watch Man United versus Everton on the weekend, and I told my wife, "Now you know what, I'm going to do some overtime on the weekend for work instead," shows levels in terms
I'd rather work than watch my football team.
That hurts a bit though.
You're just kind of looking at it. And then my other alternative was going to watch rugby for two teams that have nothing to play for. And I was like to Travis, and I was like, I could have gone to that, but I'd rather not go and watch Man United play, because you're looking at it and you're looking at all this money spent. And again, I hate using this example because it's been spent wildly, but it's been spent nevertheless. You're looking at all this money spent. It's affecting the fans who actually go to games and get to appreciate the stadium and everything. And this is where Ineos will, I believe, sort it out. They'll look at all these amazing signings that have happened across the Premier League. How did they spend this money? Why did they spend this money? What was the benefit of spending this money? And then they're looking at Manchester United. You spent the money times three, or this guy's getting three times this guy's wages. A prime example for me, you're looking at someone like Marcus Rashford, 300,000 pounds a week. He's on the same level as Haaland, De Bruyne, Mohamed Salah. Not that level of player as well. You're looking at someone like Andre Onana, who's the third highest paid keeper in the league after Alisson and Edison. Not that level, in my opinion, as well. That Champions League run for Inter Milan just sold people dreams as well. You're looking at Manchester United paying £80 million for Harry Maguire because Virgil van Dijk was sold for £80 million or £75 million to Liverpool. Not that caliber of player at all. And you're looking at all these different things where Manchester United have previously fallen so short in the transfer market where it's affected the next season and the next season and the next season.
I'd say the biggest example for me, honestly, is... I hate to always bring everything back to Tottenham because I feel like it's the only thing I ever do. But Madison, he was, 40 million from a relegated Leicester? And we all knew how good he was and how much of a proven Premier League talent he was. If Man United had come in with the same offer we'd come in with, he would have gone to Man United.
We did put an offer in, but Ten Hag preferred Mount because of his versatility, which makes no sense because now versatility is becoming a killer in football. Sara and I, we spoke about this before. When you're playing players out of position and then they're getting criticised for playing bad football, it doesn't benefit the player at all. So they should really just say, no, boss, I don't want to play out of position.
Specialists.
Yeah, literally. Because Madison is one of the few specialist number 10s we've got in the league because Odegaard can play deeper, Bruno Fernandes can play deeper, KDB's been playing deeper since his return as well. Madison is a proper number 10 who loves to have that freedom about him, but he works really hard in that system and it's kind of worked out so well for Tottenham and for James Maddison as well because Arsenal and Newcastle, the other teams in for James Maddison, Newcastle, they don't even play that side of play anymore. And Arsenal, they would have just benched James Maddison, in my opinion. They wouldn't have started him and now they've got Kai Havertz as well.
Yeah, hang on. Let me just. You're telling me they would have started Kai Havertz over Madison?
They wouldn't have bought Kai Havertz. That's the thing. They would have bought Madison. But Kai Havertz starts as a striker, remember? He doesn't play that far down anymore. Unless they play Odegaard with one centre midfielder, with Rice or Jorginho. If it's Rice, Odegaard, Madison, that would have been a killer. That would have been league winning, in my opinion.
That's title confirmed, I think. That's an insane midfield to think about, to be fair. I'm so glad we've got him, honestly.
Fantasy football. But sorry, any last questions regarding Manchester United for me on this round of a podcast? By the way, Man City 3-1 up as well. Halftime. Killer.
Yeah, I saw Haaland with the last-minute goal before the half even ended. I thought, good game.
Just sub them all off for the Liverpool game.
We're dancing in Real Madrid's box for the last 20 there.
I don't get it with RB Leipzig. They're so fun to watch, but they just don't have that killer anymore. Maybe because they gave Timo Werner to Spurs for some reason as well. It's not looking good. They should be scoring right now, RB Leipzig. I'm ready for the second half in a bit.
Lunin had a couple of saves from Madrid there, but let's hope there's a second half. Manchester United are not finishing in the top four. Confirmed? Don't confirm.
Guaranteed.
Oh, okay, perfect.
I think fifth is the best we can hope for. But again, stranger things have happened. We've been in this situation before, like I've said, and we finished third. We've been sixth with like 10 games to go and we finished third two seasons previously as well, which is, again, under different management, different players, but I'm not going to hang my hat on it. I'm not going to rely upon it as well. I'm expecting Europa League football for next season as well. I'm expecting Thursday nights and Sunday, which is a killer routine for any club as well. But I'm not
expecting. Here's a question then, just quickly. With you saying about Europa League being the best you can hope for, would you almost prefer not to be in Europe altogether rather than be in the Europa League?
Not at all. Personally, because of the finances. Remember, financial fair play is a killer these days, and you need as much money as you kind of need. And if it means we play our younger players and we may get a new manager by the summer, they can then experience new types of play, style of play, and it gives the younger players more experience as well. But if we do keep Erik ten Hag for another season, and you're looking at if he needs European football, give him European football, because we need to be into European football. We need to challenge for trophies, and we need to be considered a better team if we're in these tournaments. The downside of that is, Travis, as you know, you can rather go for all the way for the Champions League, or you can end up in the Conference League. And if we end up in the Conference League, it will be a laughing stock for Manchester United.
Guaranteed trophy, though, surely. If a team like Man United are in that competition, surely they win it.
Aston Villa are like looking favourites right now in the Conference League as well. Ajax are playing this week as well in the Conference League, which is crazy. But yeah, end of season predictions for me. I'm expecting us to finish fifth or sixth outside the top four, but I'm hoping for fourth because I'm always thinking we're going to finish in the top four as well, which will be great. But I think that's it from me. Any last remaining questions? Because I wanted to talk about one last thing. And the last thing I wanted to talk... Sorry, I interrupted myself. Were there any last questions, Sarah, Travis? That's all.
My only one from Man United, from a Man United perspective, I think, do you think Erik ten Hag deserves that next season? Do you think he's earned a third season?
I think so. Because of the goodwill of his first season. But again, if it's not looking good in the third season, he may have to change as well. But that's what I have to say as well. But yeah, last question before we wrap up, because it's been a fantastic conversation before wrapping up for Ramadan, I would say as well. Who is the greatest La Liga striker of all time?
Get out of here.
Find out next week on our Ramadan special. That's what we've got, because Sarah and I have planned a Ramadan special. Well, it's not really a Ramadan special, but it's a pre-recorded podcast, and that is happening next week.
Special. Yes, it is.
It is indeed, which is good fun. But no, everyone, thank you very much for listening. Do look out for our Ramadan content, because we are not going anywhere. Do look out for our social medias. Do follow Sarah Pararia on her socials, because she's absolutely killing it, as always. And it's good to have Travis back as well, becoming a better goalkeeper, which is not good for me as well. But everyone, thank you very much for your time. Travis, Sarah, as always, a pleasure. See you next time.